Welcome back to the Commute Podcast. I'm Contra. Hey, let me share a few things real quick with you guys before I take a trip away for a bit. And I know that it might be on some of your minds, and maybe some of you know, and maybe some of you don't know. But I want to tackle the question that's been bouncing around with all this hype of these corporations scooping up Bitcoin. And, you know, it's the simple question of why isn't the Bitcoin price going up, even though we keep hearing about all these companies buying billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin every single week. Because in your head, you're thinking, shouldn't that kind of that demand send the price soaring? I think that's the viral question. It's probably been sparking a few debates here and there. And it might seem simple at first. Buying pushes prices up, right? But when you dig in, it's a window into how Bitcoin has changed. You know, what institutions are really doing and why price action doesn't always follow the headlines. So let's unpack it. A few days ago, I saw a post basically saying, can anyone explain to me why companies are buying billions of dollars of Bitcoin every week and the price is virtually unchanged over the last 6 months? And if you look at the history of Bitcoin, this is, it falls in line with its history over, you know, we'll have a bull run, then we'll have an eight month sideways picture before we have another one. And it's an important question. I think it deserves to be answered, but I think around, Bitcoin did hit an all-time high of 111,000 back in late May. And since then, it dipped back to 106, and as of today, we tipped 110 again today. So we did drop a little bit. It's not much in absolute term, but it's shocking if you're expecting fireworks. You know, everywhere you look, you see, you know, news of Sailor and MicroStrategy and all these other companies buying another billion, or a pension fund scooping up Bitcoin, or another ETF adding coins to its balance sheet. Yet if you zoom out on the price chart, it looks like we're just treading water. And a lot of retail investors, people who came into Bitcoin expecting, you know, huge price swings, are baffled. And the sideways action feels strange, doesn't it? But I don't think to those who have been around long enough. And, you know, or is this exactly what happens when Bitcoin becomes, you know, more mature? That's why I'm going to unpack it. And first, we need to talk about what Bitcoin actually is today. Bitcoin has gone through, you know, a radical transformation since its birth in 2009. In the early days, it was supposed to be peer-to-peer electronic cash, which it still is today. But fast forward to 2025, Bitcoin has clearly become something different. It's what a lot of people are calling digital gold. It's a store of value, not a spend everyday currency. And hopefully we get to that spend everyday currency. That's my hope. We need to get to that hyper Bitcoinization. But, you know, MicroStrategy was the first major corporation to publicly announce it was buying Bitcoin as a treasury reserve asset. And that started a cascade. Other companies, family offices, hedge funds, and even sovereign wealth funds began moving small but meaningful portions of their cash reserves into Bitcoin. But they're not buying it to spend it. They're buying it to hold, often in cold storage, meaning it's locked away offline and effectively out of circulation. When companies do this, they aren't flipping coins on exchanges. They're buying over the counter and taking coins off of the market and essentially sending them to the vault. And this process is a lot like taking physical gold bars and putting them into a bank safe. And then once they're there, they don't participate in the day-to-day market. And if they don't move, they don't contribute to the kind of supply and demand, you know, the supply and demand tug of war that causes prices to spike. They just sit. So while it looks like there's massive buying pressure, that pressure isn't active in the way that speculative day traders' orders are. The coins move from one holder to another, and then they go dark. So supply and demand, it still matters. And if there's one thing I want you to take away from this episode today is that price is set by active supply and demand, not headlines about how much is being bought or sold in total. Even if billions of dollars in Bitcoin are changing hands, if that buying is matched by people's eager to sell, then the price doesn't budge. And one of the best ways to think about this comes from the legendary investor Jim Chanos. And he made a quote. I remember it. It said, if you bought it, someone else sold it. I think that was his quote. In other words, every trade has two sides. When institutions buy, there are sellers who are just as motivated to get out. Whether they're early investors, you know, taking profits or funds or rotating to other assets, the market price reflects the balance between these two sides. If you have the same amount of enthusiasm on the sell side as you do on the buy side, then the price doesn't move much, essentially. And that's exactly what we're seeing. Sellers, you know, who accumulated Bitcoin years ago are happy right now to exit at six figures. Meanwhile, the buyers aren't chasing the price aggressively. They're patient, buying over time and not causing big upward spikes. So the myth is that institutional buying automatically leads to soaring price, misses the fact that the price is set at the margin by the intensity of buyers relative to sellers. And right now, there's no mad rush. So what are the new drivers of the market? Let's talk about what actually moves Bitcoin's price in big ways. Speculation and retail mania, essentially. You know, during the 2017 and 2021 bull runs, the average person was straight FOMO, buying on exchanges. Influencers, you know, hyped altcoins on YouTube. People mortgaged houses to buy crypto. You know, that frantic demand from millions of retail investors was what pushed Bitcoin from thousands to tens of thousands. Not quite institutional allocations. But the speculative fire that drives, you know, parabolic moves is largely missing today. Retail investors are either burned from past cycles, or they're sitting in stable coins, or they've left the market altogether. And institutions aren't momentum traders, essentially. They're conservative buyers who spread purchases over weeks or months and not over hours. So another factor that we're dealing with today is the Bitcoin ETFs. And these ETFs give investors exposure to Bitcoin's price, but they don't necessarily cause new coins to be pulled from exchanges. Some ETFs, you know, buy actual Bitcoin. Some hold cash-settled derivatives. Either way, the ETF buyers aren't rapidly bidding at prices like retail used to. And that's why, despite big numbers in buying, we're not seeing explosive price moves. And, you know, without new retail speculation, the price moves are essentially muted. And now we have to bring in, and even Trump's bringing in, the government, the U.S. government, is talking about stable coins taking the spotlight. And, you know, while Bitcoin's been stuck, stable coins have quietly taken over as crypto's most used assets. These tokens like USDT and USDC are essentially digital dollars you can send instantly 24/7 without banks. At least in this year, 2025, stablecoins settle trillions of dollars every day, dwarfing Bitcoin's on-chain transaction volumes. And one of the reasons stablecoins are thriving is exactly what I just spoke about, the Genius Act, which was passed by Congress earlier this year. And that law created clear rules for stablecoins, requiring them to be fully backed and audited, while giving them legitimacy as a mainstream payment tool. So for businesses and freelancers and even some governments, stablecoins are simply better money, faster, more transparent, and cheaper to move than traditional banking. So if you think of Bitcoin as a digital bar of gold, stablecoins are digital cash. And people don't buy gold to pay for coffee. They buy cash to spend. So it makes sense that these stablecoins are the real lifeblood of the crypto commerce today, while Bitcoin sits in the vault as a reserve. And my hope is that this flips, the script flips. And so, which I think leads into what we should talk about, you know, what I would say are the two crypto economies. We've reached a split in crypto's evolution. There are now, I think, effectively two economies coexisting together. One is the vault economy of Bitcoin, where coins are hoarded and used as protection against inflation, you know, and currency debasement, or even, you know, systematic risks. The other is the transaction economy, powered by stablecoins, what we just talked about, where money moves quickly for salaries, purchases, and more. And this divergence, I think, helps explain why Bitcoin's price can stagnate even as the broader crypto activity explodes elsewhere. You know, think about it like the difference between a savings account and a checking account. Bitcoin is a savings account where you lock away money and forget about it, and these stable coins are the checking account. You use them, you know, for everyday spending. So if stable coins keep growing, they may drive crypto adoption even faster than Bitcoin ever did. And that's good for the broader ecosystem, but it doesn't actually, you know, or automatically translate into Bitcoin's price action. So we need more legislation and people pushing this, you know, the Bitcoin narrative and what it actually is, which is better for the people living in the government than just for the government themselves, because these stablecoins are still essentially monitored by the government and in government control. And we don't want that. That's the whole reason why Bitcoin exists. So I think there's also, you know, a psychological factor and a perception. You know, a big part of why this flat Bitcoin price feels strange, I think, is really just psychological. Bitcoin has a reputation as the most, you know, volatile asset on earth. People expect it to either crash, you know, spectacularly or explode upward. So sideways action always feels alien. But in reality, this calm period is part of Bitcoin's maturing process. As bigger players accumulate and hold, volatility essentially decreases. It's a sign Bitcoin is becoming a serious asset class. It's not just a casino anymore. So, but I think perception still matters. You know, the myth of Bitcoin as a quiet ticket to a 10x return is deeply ingrained. You know, many investors enter Bitcoin chasing these stories. When it trades like a slow-moving bond or, you know, a lump of gold, that disappointment sets in. And I would encourage you to hold on. This is part of the plan. It's coming. Don't worry. And I understand that frustration can lead to short-term selling on some people's behalfs, you know, or social media negativity reinforcing this sideways price action. And I think there's an institutional strategy that's going on. And to really understand it, we have to look at the institutional motivations. These aren't YOLO traders. Companies and funds are buying Bitcoin because they see it as an insurance policy, a way to hedge against inflation and the de-dollarization or the banking crisis. You know, El Salvador and the Central African Republic have even put Bitcoin on their national balance sheets. But they didn't do it to flip, you know, for quick profits. They did it to diversify, you know, away from unstable currencies. So when big institutions and governments buy Bitcoin, they typically plan to hold it for years, even decades. They're not going to chase price spikes or panic sell during, you know, drawdowns. And this diamond hands approach leads to a slow drip of accumulation. That's why I say hold on. You know, not feeding, it's not the feeding frenzy needed for parabolic price moves. It's slow and progressive over time. So what could reignite Bitcoin's price into the one that, you know, explodes? I can't even say it right. Explodes, right? Because we've seen it before. And I think one possibility is a sudden shift in macroeconomic conditions. A spike in inflation, or, you know, a currency crisis, or a major central bank announcing Bitcoin reserves. You know, another is the return of, you know, retail mania, with average investors, piling back in as media hype returns. Because I think they will. They'll come back. They'll get into it. But absent, you know, a clear catalyst, Bitcoin looks set to remain in a more stable range, which is a good thing. Trading like a mature asset rather than, you know, a speculative rocket. And this doesn't mean Bitcoin is dead. It means it's growing. So here's what I've covered today. It's, you know, billions in Bitcoin buys don't guarantee rising prices if coins are locked away in cold storage and sellers match buyers. Speculation drives big price moves, and right now, speculative demand is tepid. Meanwhile, stablecoins have quietly become the real engines of crypto's everyday economy, pushing billions around the world faster than banks ever could. But Bitcoin's role has evolved. It's not the currency you'll spend at a coffee shop tomorrow, although there are coffee shops accepting it, but it's becoming an asset you might hold for decades. I would like to see both. That's the goal. So, I think there's been a fundamental change in a lot of these big pocket institutions and hedge funds to hold long term. They're not going to be using it. So, I don't do this episode to discourage you. I want to continue to encourage you and tell you that it's happening. It's coming. It's slow moving, but I think there's some green candles coming our way in the not so far future, and it's all just boiling up. So be ready for it. Stack while you can. Thanks for listening. I'm Contra. Hope this little rant helped you understand why Bitcoin's price doesn't always follow the headlines. So if you enjoyed, go like my podcast. It's on all mainstream podcast platforms. Follow, subscribe. If you're on a value for value podcast, go and shoot me some zaps. Share it with someone you want to know what's really going on with Bitcoin. Until next time, stay sovereign, stay free, keep stacking.